Music, among other things.
Music among other things.
Music among other things.
You've got to meet Lisa Marie, and it's like she's like, you're meeting her at a bar, like a pub. So you think you're just going to a bar, but the bar's been shut down. The bar's like, you know, closed to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way it was, you know what I mean? So I'm unemployed. I'm unemployed. So you've got that side of your life. It's like quite a polar opposite in a lot of ways.
Episode 13. Very happy to say we're joined by James Adam from Las Vegas on this episode to chat about film soundtracks, his football career, and a group's new record, Godspeed. James is one of my all-time favourite songwriters, lots sometimes from Euphoric Heartbreak, particularly as a mainstay in my Desert Island Disc whenever I put it together, so it's a real pleasure to have him on. We get into Annoying Neighbours, his friendship with Alan McGee, famous as the man who discovered Oasis, and some LA stories, which he has many of. Check out the links in the description for info about their tour and playlist of all the songs discussed. You can also follow us on MAOT Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Without further ado, let's get into it. Enjoy. So yeah, welcome to MAOT.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Just home.
Nice. So that's it. Are you in Glasgow?
In Glasgow, yeah.
We do a thing called Recently Added on this show. So it's essentially just a candid telling of what's been sort of recently added on your Apple, Spotify, or whatever you've been listening to recently.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got anything to hand?
I think it's been mostly soundtracks that I've been listening to.
Oh, nice.
My fiance got me the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Cracking.
So that's a double vinyl. And that's one of my favourite movies right now. Well, it's my favourite movie right now. So it normally is. It's normally soundtracks that I normally would put on. That's it, really. We watch a lot of movies together, so I think that's probably why then, when I'm maybe hearing certain music and the movies, then I would go and listen to the soundtrack, you know what I mean?
It's quite a varied soundtrack as well, and it's got Simon and Garfunkel on and everything, I remember.
I know, it is. And then they've got the commercials and stuff. I don't know if you heard any, they've got like little advertisements for like random.
Oh yeah,
it's really cool. There's really cool. We're looking at. I've just moved into a house, and we're looking at getting some film posters, but of the character in his movies. If that makes sense. So like as a cowboy and like Jack.
Oh, Dalton, I saw it was
pretty cool. Yeah,
Rick Dalton.
That's one.
That's right. Bounty Law. That was it.
Yeah. They look really cool, but yeah, Tarantino soundtracks are awesome.
Oh, they're always really, really great.
I think I heard a story about Tarantino tried to either really replicate the radio sort of signals and who was DJing at the time in the film, or he tracked down them, like actual, you know, snippets from proper 60s radio and placed them in the film. You know, how sort of, you know, he's so detailed in films. I can't remember which way around it was, but it was something along that.
I think a part of it was from one of the record I think it was maybe like Sony or something, and they were suggesting like maybe like certain things from the radio from that time, so that he would, you know, he's maybe a team of people who would be working on it with him, but when they sent him the, you know, suggestions that he could maybe use if he liked, it was not like they sent them like MP3s or like they had to like press up vinyl, just like a one-off vinyl with suggestions for them. And I think that's quite good.
Yeah, definitely. I think Nils is saying he's been playing soundtracks to, he's just got a cat, that's right, isn't it, Nils?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, we just got a one-year-old kitten, and it seems like quite classical soundtrack composition to calm it down. But I got to have it. I was playing Xbox yesterday with my headset on, and I forgot who was running in the background. And all of a sudden, she just started scatting out, and I realised it was Star Wars just like beaming from the kitchen.
Oh, really?
Quite intense for her, but yeah, some good tunes. But it's just general random soundtracks, like a lot of Hans Zimmer stuff, like Christopher Nolan films and stuff like that.
Oh, I was thinking about Christopher Nolan there as well, and Hans Zimmer with we went to see the movie Tenet. Have you saw that?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard it's a proper sort of mindfuck.
It's really good. It's brilliant. It's really, really. It's in it. The soundtrack for that, I don't know who done the soundtrack. I think it was somebody. It wasn't Zimmer, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Some other guy, I think, that done it. But the soundtrack, and the same with his movies, the soundtrack's always good, you know.
Yeah.
Interstellar and all that kind of thing. Because I love organs. I'm a bit of an organ nerd. So, you know what I mean? So I've got like a few organs and stuff like that. And so I like when he was using the big church pipe organ on Interstellar. That was cool, man. It's because it reminds me of another soundtrack. It's Ennio Morricone. It's a kind of lesser known soundtrack that he done. It was like an Italian erotic, weird as fuck movie called Magdalena. But the music for it, it kind of reminded me a bit of that. It's an amazing, one of my favourite soundtracks for this movie.
Can have an amazing sound, can't it? I think, am I right in saying the Hammond organ is one of the sort of gems in that world, or there's like an old Hammond organ from the 70s which is really sought after?
We're thinking of the B3 probably, that it's that the Hammond I like the actual, I mean, I've got an organ, it's an Este organ I've got, and it's like, it's from like 18 something, I can't remember what the date was, but it's like really, really, really old, and it's, you pedal it with your feet. So you pedal with your feet, and it blows the air through the pipes. You know,
incredible.
And everybody hates this thing, right? Everybody's got a problem. My sister hates that. My sister manages a band, and she's just like, she's got something against it. I think it's the weight. She doesn't like the weight of it. she manages us, so when I'm wanting to take it to play a gig with it or whatever, then she's always just like, "We're not taking that." Or she'll make sure whatever transport that she hires, it's not big enough. That's all, then, you know. Well, it's actually we moved studios. So we moved to a studio like a few weeks ago to another studio, and it's like the studio that she'd like set up for us to go to. We moved all this stuff, so much equipment, from one to the other studio, and there's only one thing remaining in the old studio, and it's that organ, because there's not enough room to actually get it in the door at the new place. And I think she knew that when she booked it. I don't know what I'm going to do with this thing, because it's quite heavy, and I live up like stairs and stuff like that. But I think Neil Young plays like one the same.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's an SD. I think he's got an SD as well. I love Hawkins.
Sweet. I remember once at uni, for some reason, I sort of snuck into the chapel, and there's like an organ in there. So I sort of found myself like a little bit drunk, just sort of playing the organ in the chapel. I don't really know why I did it, but it felt good when I was there.
What did you play?
Yeah, that's a good question, you know.
Was it the EastEnders theme tune? No.
Well, Rugrats.
I probably just shifted around some chords or something. I don't know. So recently added for the rest of you guys. So we've got Neil. Ryan, what's your recently added, mate?
I've been listening to a lot of sort of, it sounds like a lot of country music recently. And then sort of veering off that, I listened to quite a cool interview with Zane Lowe and Cat Stevens. And so I've just been listening to a bit of Cat Stevens, and there's a song, let me just find it. It's called If You Want to Sing Out, Sing Out. It's just a really catchy little tune. It's really cool.
Oh, nice. Can I share that one out? I do like a bit of Cat Stevens. I feel like I've got to go a bit deeper on him now. How about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I've been watching a Netflix show called Kingdom, and it's just got a wicked soundtrack to that as well, actually. So I've just been Shazamming like tunes that come up, and one band that come up was called The Palms. And just been listening to them. Yeah, just liked a couple of their tunes that was on the show, and just been going through their catalogue. So yeah, just been on them.
When you said Netflix, though, I thought you were going to say America's Got Talent.
I do love a bit of shit like trash TV, and someone's got me involved in this like proper dark UFC gritty thing. So it makes a change, yeah, from what I normally watch. That's for sure.
Nice. How about you, Rich? What have you been listening to?
I've found there's this band called Duds. I don't think they're like massively well known, but there's this tune called A Different Stage. And on their album, it's a different version, but the exclusive single, I think it's called A Different Stage Part 2, but it's like, it's just really cool. It's quite punky, quite angular. The bloke's kind of like half shouting, half talking. It's really cool. It like proper gets me going.
Oh, sounds good. One of my recently added was, I was actually looking at your, I know you put up the playlist on sort of Spotify, James. And I was actually listening to Rainbow Connection by Kermit, and I hadn't ever listened to it before. So, like, for some reason, it passed me by. And you know, just like looking into the lyrics, and there's been so many different versions of it.
You know more about Kermit than I do by the sound of it. Yeah, I never really imagined or thought about the possibility of somebody actually listening to the playlist. So I apologise for that.
No, it's great. It's great, man. Proper loved it. You guys you brought your new single, Keep Me in Space, ahead of Godspeed, which is out in April. So as I understand it, you've sort of completely done this by yourself, as in you've engineered, recorded and produced a record on your own. What made you want to take that approach, and how have you found that process?
I just had a feeling, really, that it was probably a good idea to understand that language a bit more, just to give me the independence to, no matter what would happen in life, you know, I would always be able to, like, make some music or whatever. But I think that was maybe a part of it, you know, instinctively. But and sometimes I think it can be quite difficult as well when you've got a feeling that something's supposed to be a certain way, but you can't speak that language to communicate it with someone. You know what I mean? It can be. So I think maybe just understanding that a bit more was just something that I felt that was the time to do that. You know, and I never you kind of realize a lot of things that you're really not that natural at, you know, because I just thought it would probably be the same as writing songs. And I've never really thought if it's good or bad the way that I write songs. I've always just thought, well, that's kind of, I know that that's my little, you know, truth, or that's how I intended the idea to be. And it's always really been something that I've not really had to, it's not felt like something that I couldn't do. It was always just quite, like making the music part, the melody and all that, it just like, boom, it would just come. And it was no, it was just no effortless, but it felt just like it flowed. And I felt like quite, you know, I'm not in command of the enterprise, but you feel quite in control in a way, and it just flows, man. But I think the engineering side has been probably, you know, I think when you realise that you actually are natural at certain things, it's not through doing something well. I think it's through when you really struggle with other things. Then you realise that there's some things that you actually were natural with, but you never knew that at the time. You just thought everybody was the same. But I think it's when I've been engineering, then it's, you know, things like when I need to like name the bass tracks. I found that at the beginning, I found it so overwhelming. I would look at like five tracks, maybe, and one was distorted bass, and one was the amplifier, one was, you know, it was like in a different room, it was a different amp, and I had to name them all. And I remember the whole whatever I was looking at just started to look like it was just like static or something. It was just all fuzzy, and I was just like, I'm not very good at this. So I had to like kind of try and like force myself just to be a bit better with that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. Was there sort of a lot of YouTube tutorials you were watching?
No, that's the thing that I'm really, I'm terrible at reading anything. Like, for a start, right. I'm really bad at reading like instructions for anything. I'm really bad at reading books or whatever. I'm just a terrible reader. I read like one line and then I start to get that really, I just lose my way with it, you know what I mean? But with the YouTube stuff, it's the same. I'm not very good with instructions, you know. I think maybe I'm just dumb. Maybe that's the thing. I think I've got a really small brain. I'm just dumb.
Connecting caller to Las Vegas fan hotline, line one.
Hi, this is Col Knott. Just wanted to say a few things about the new Las Vegas record. If it's anything to go off, keep me a space. I can honestly can't wait for it. Long overdue. It's been a long 7-8 years, but it's something I think will be definitely worth the wait. And I can't wait to see the band tour with it and seeing it perform live. Luckily for me, I've been able to see the band from Stoke to Stockholm. But I'd say my favourite gig was the Barrowlands gig in 2018, around Christmas time. Just the hometown show, and the crowd were amazing. And just wanted to say thank you to them, because I've made some amazing friends and following them around the UK and a bit around Europe has been life-changing for me as well. So thank you.
Thanks for your call.
I think I saw on the Tim's Twitter listening party, Rab was saying that you didn't want the Keep Me A Space to be a single, and then it was Alan McGee who heard it and convinced you. So I guess sometimes you sort of need that outside voice to look at something. I guess if you're in it and like naming bass tracks and stuff like that, it must be really hard to make judgments, I guess, at the same time.
I mean, Alan's great. Alan's always quite he's always quite unpredictable with the way that he'll look at something. Anything that I think's you know, like, not really, I don't really think much of it, he'll think it's a big deal, and you know, vice versa. It's like, but if you think you've played like a bad show or whatever, you'll see Alan after it, and Alan will be like, "That was fucking great," and then when you think you've done a good show, then he'll be like, "It was all right. It was all right."
Yeah, you can sort of tell. That's interesting. Because I guess it's been, I think it was literally 7 years to the day yesterday, which was like the 2nd of September, since the last album came out. So I take it, you know, that 7-year gap, has that been sort of solely focused on this new record, or have you been doing other things as well?
It's been mostly the record. I mean, there's been other things as well that I've been always in between, like, just in between. I've been working on that I would... Hopefully I could, you know, get them kind of released quite soon as well, like working with other people and stuff like that.
Awesome.
And it's sort of I just like trying to get stuff complete and just tell it, you know, just so I can move on to the next thing. Because I don't really, I mean, you wouldn't think it, you know what I mean, because it's took that long, but I actually don't like, messing about too long with something, which I know that's totally, it sounds like bullshit because it's took me this long, but. I hope it's not always like this, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess once you've done it once and you're in, you know, next time it'll be even easier, I guess.
I've even found it, like, no, I found it from song to song, you know, the first song to the second. Everything got like a little quicker, you know what I mean?
That's awesome. Because I was also looking on the Tim's Twitter listening party where you put up video of your fiance. She had took like a home sort of recording, and you were sort of doing these apocalyptic guitar loops or something at home. So was there a lot of home recording involved in this?
Yeah, especially over the last, I'd say, maybe year.
Yeah,
we had a little studio in Glasgow as well, and but my fiance's Swedish, so when we were in Stockholm for some periods as well, then it would just be like, you know, just in the flat next to the fridge totally buzzing, and like just wherever I was, you know what I mean. Even if me and her were in like Los Angeles or whatever, I would normally have like a microphone and some stuff there. And I would normally just do it wherever I was, you know what I mean? But that's right, she done that wee video. She's actually sitting in here right now. Gotta say hi, Molly. But the thing is, it's like, I never really thought about anybody else being able to hear the music outside my neighbours and all that, but my neighbour down the stairs being a bit, he's like, he just moved into that house down the stairs, man, and he did that. I don't think he really, like, like he doesn't really appreciate like the amplifier that I've got.
Oh, damn.
So he sent me the odd text, you know what I mean? And I think the thing is, like, sometimes what will happen is Rab maybe will record a guitar part and then I'll reamp it. So that means that you take whatever Rab's recorded and then you put it an amp in a different room and you put that sound to the other room in the amp and maybe it'll come back through in a different way, right? So it could be like one tiny part that will be looping around for about an hour, you know what I mean?
Oh, right.
And it could be like this some annoying sound or something. So I think that he knows that I'm in the band now, but I think when he first moved in, it was like the way he would text me was like, as always, just up here doodling. You know what I mean? And he'd be like, turn that doodle, like, can you just turn it down a bit, man? Because it's putting me off my important office work here, man. It's like, you know what I mean? I know you're up there and you have no job and it's just like, you're just fucking about, man. But he's like, I've got a good job, man. So, and I'll just turn it down. I'm a nice neighbour.
Yeah, in lockdown, I guess it's even more intense.
That's when it's been really, normally before the lockdown, it was totally fine. You know what I mean? But it's just that's just that now, you know what I mean? But
my dad came in once when I was sort of thrashing away on a guitar, and then he was like, oh, the neighbour said, you know, he doesn't mind the noise, but it's a little bit out of tune. And that really, like, got to me.
I know, it's something that you take it to heart. I mean, I don't really mind. I don't read reviews and stuff like that. I don't mind. I think whatever anybody says, But there's truth in it. If that's their truth, then that's it. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean it's everybody's truth, but I think when it's a neighbour, that could really fucking piss you off, man. You know what I mean?
It's true. Right, Brian, you had a similar incident or something, right?
I didn't mind it. I found it funny. When I used to sort of go to music college, one of my flatmates, he was a vocalist, and he decided that his sort of unique selling point was going to be he was going to play saxophone as well, and his granddad had like this incredible saxophone he was playing, but the guy had no idea how to play it, so he just said to himself, I'm going to play Careless Whisper off the bat, I'm just going to do it. And he must have given it a go for about a week, but I remember walking home to my house and you could hear it two roads away. And I think he just got pressured into just giving up eventually, and I'm kind of glad he did.
Oh, wow.
Because it wasn't great.
But what do you think would be worse? What do you think would be worse if he played Careless Whisper like perfect and you had to listen to that over and over again?
Yeah, well, I think it's a good tune, that, but I don't know if I could listen to end of it all the time.
And I think the album artwork is really interesting as well, and it's in the same, you know, uses the sort of same style as The Clash and Elvis before you. And, you know, both of those albums capture some sort of moment. You know, those covers, you know, you've got Elvis mid performance on his one, and then you got Paul Simon smashing his bass. And on the Sleep for the New Record, obviously there's some sort of moment going on there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to sort of work out. I mean, what's the story behind the cover and the decision there?
I think it was, we were playing a gig in New York and it was in Lower East Side. And I think it was maybe before the after the sound check or something, I must have left the venue, and it was my friend Angela McCluskey, who took the photo. When we were walking past, it was a blind boy with his father, and he was trying to be healed by a man on a wheelchair. It was like they were just in the at the side of the street. And I was walking past, and she just took the photo. And I don't know why it was maybe. I don't know why it popped into my head, but I started to think about the Elvis Presley cover, and then obviously the Clash one as well. And then I imagined that being their cover. I mean, as I'd said it before, that Elvis done it. Right, it's I love Elvis, and it's such a one of my favourite covers and stuff like that. But so he's done it, and he's done it really. It's Elvis, you know what I mean? And so the Clash done a kind of rock and roll thing as well with the guitar smashing. But you know, it's like music can be received in all different ways, and the intention behind music can be so different for band to band. And yeah, it's the same with art as well. Any kind of art, it's the thought or the soul behind it it can really be so different. And when I was thinking about, you know, what is faith, or what is kind of sort of believing that something can work, you know, what is desperation and all these things. And I guess it was heavy enough when I looked at it that I thought it was, you know, it's like when there's with some of the things, the songs that I've written, it had to mean something. It had to mean something to me. And because I couldn't justify, you know, being in a band and like going to like Chicago on a Tuesday night and singing on a stage unless it was something that it meant a lot. It meant something to me. You know, it doesn't need to mean like, you don't need to think, well, this will mean a lot to the whole world. It's not that. It's just, it means a lot to me. And music, rock and roll, being in a band or whatever, that's the vehicle that I chose to let that out. You know what I mean? And I'm normally attracted to things like that, whether it's in any kind of, if it's in art or just in life or whatever, it's something that is that can move me. It needs to, and that when I saw that photo, it was just quite a mad photograph.
Almost
doesn't look real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's like a lot going on. It's a great cover because you're sort of trying to sort of question what's going on. I was also looking at the. Rolling Stone had a list of 100 greatest album covers, and they put Elvis Presley's original artwork at number 14 and The Clash at number 39. So I guess we can only hope when they do a new one, Las Vegas is at 38 or something.
Well, that's the way it should go, I guess.
Connecting caller to Las Vegas fan hotline, line one.
Hi, James. This is Dan Tracy from Birmingham. I'm absolutely buzzing, delighted about the comeback next year. Can't wait for the gig in Birmingham next April. It's the day before my birthday, so three of us are coming to see you. It's going to be fantastic to actually see some proper live music again. First got into the band, probably like a lot of people, heard Geraldine. That was the one that seemed to get a lot of play back in, I think, 2008. But favourite song has always been Cheating Heart. It's the one my neighbours probably know. When I get in after a few beers, it's the one I put on loud and sing stupidly. So, I'm guessing the neighbours probably know that one. Albums, obviously the original album was brilliant. I really like When TV Turns to Static as well. And I love the new single, Keep Me a Space. Look forward to seeing you next April. Hopefully I'll get a chance to come say hello to you. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call.
Obviously, we've only heard one single so far, but I listened to your conversation with Alan McGee and understand the song Shake the Cage is in the end credits of the upcoming film about Creation Records.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I guess it was just through Alan and the people making the movie that must have heard the song, you know. I didn't think anything of it. Like, they would be interested in using any of our music for it, you know, because it's like no our story really, you know what I mean? Alan was that's Alan again. He's quite surprising like that, you know what I mean? So I was quite surprised when he said that. But it was a song that my sister had her first boy called Theo a few years ago, and when I saw him for the first time, then I just thought, okay, you obviously won't understand anything I'm saying. And I thought, well, what if he could? And what would I say? You know what I mean? What would I say to myself if, you know, when I was younger or whatever? And so I told my sister I've wrote a song for Theo. And I think she thought it was going to be like, you know, rainbows and hearts and flowers and all that. She says, what's it called? And I was like, Shake the Cage. I think she just thinks I'm probably quite a weird brother. So she kind of expects it because she knows what I'm like. But I think then she heard it. But she, so that's basically the what the song's about, really. You know.
Oh, incredible! I mean, I know you're a bit of a film, you know, buff. Have you got any of your favourite sort of end credit songs or songs that see out movies?
I don't even know if I'm a film buff or anything like that, but I think it's because, as I said before, I'm really bad at reading. And I think that's always been a thing where I would rather look at a picture or I would rather watch like a movie or something, just because I'm really bad at reading. But but end credits for movies, is there any that you're thinking of?
Yeah, I went down a proper rabbit hole earlier, like when me and Sean were talking about it. And yeah, I suppose like there's a ton. And then when you start having a proper look, it's absolutely loads. Like Goodfellas. I always remember Goodfellas, and it was like Sid Vicious, and it was like My Way. It was his cover of My Way.
Was that at the end? Goodfellas. I thought, why is that straight?
Yeah, there's like
he opens the door when it's he opens his front door. That's when he's
That's it. Yeah, and he's standing there under the witness protection.
It's one of my favourite end credits is Philadelphia, the movie Philadelphia.
I haven't seen that.
Well, this was the one with Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington.
Is that the Bruce Springsteen song at the end, or is it something else?
I don't think it's right at the end of the movie. I can't remember if Springsteen's right at the end, or if it's maybe before somewhere in the movie. But it was a song by Neil Young.
It's
called Philadelphia.
Oh, amazing!
So I don't know how well known a Neil Young song it is, but it's one of my favourite songs ever, and so it's like it's the family after the funeral. They're sitting watching the TV, and it must be a videotape of when their son was alive or whatever, and then the music comes on. But I think there's a point where it everything comes together at the one point where it's kind of got you. It's kind of got you. You're hanging by a thread. Like you're kind of it's quite like, I don't know, sad, really sad, and you feel sad. You feel you feel the emotion of the movie, and then just as you're trying not to like have a tear in your eye, then Neil Young's piano comes in, and that just fucking knocks you over the edge, man. If you've not seen that movie, you should check it out. I mean, I saw it when I was maybe 12 years old or something, and I saw it in the cinema with my sister. And when we sat down to first watch the movie, I was just like, fuck knows what this is about, you know what I mean? I was trying to annoy my sister. I had like a toffee crisp in my hand. I was eating this chocolate bar, and I was like making a lot of noise with it. So when I was rustling the bag and stuff like that, and my sister was really getting pissed off with me, and that was my only way that I felt like this, I was going to be able to entertain myself while this film was going. And then, and I'm sitting there, and then you know, as the movie's going on and on, then I stop with the toffee crisp, and I'm inside the movie. And I think after I saw that movie, that it was one of those things that at that age, there were certain things that I never really knew much about, you know. And it kind of looked, kind of when I left the cinema, kind of was looking at the world just, I think, a little bit different from when I had been in before, you know. So I don't, I think I probably would say about, I talk about how powerful it is, but it was probably the age that I was as well when I saw it, you know.
Yeah, that's always good when a film can do that. I remember having the same similar experience when you look at the world differently when I first watched City of God when I was quite young as well, about 13 or something. But it just, yeah, proper perspective kind of thing. But it just, it feels like you've kind of aged about 5-6 years.
Yeah.
I think I had a similar thing. You talk about Sophie Chris, but I had a hot dog and it was the first time I saw the Fellowship of the Ring. So I was only like 8 years old. I went with my mum. And I had this hot dog, and I didn't take a bite for the whole film. I was just literally in awe.
So were you just being well behaved, not to make a noise with the hot dog, or was it because you enjoyed the movie thing?
I think because my like mouth was agape for the whole thing, and I didn't have the couldn't bite,
shove it down. Yeah,
I had a very similar. It's gonna make me laugh. Same with the hot dog. There's a very famous piece of. It's not very famous. It's very famous within my family. A bit of footage when I went to Disneyland when I was about 10, and then for some reason we went to see the Barney the Dinosaur show, and literally my mouth was as wide as you can think it was, just staring at Barney, and I had a hot dog, and I just reminded me that I literally just had a hot dog the whole time, didn't it, because I was staring at Barney
literally like this guy is real. Yeah,
your childhood seems so much more exotic than mine, to be honest. I mean, I went to Butlins. My memories are going to like theme park or anything. Was when I went to Butlins for a few days, and I was like going to see Ghostbusters in some shitty little cinema or something like that. You know what I mean?
A lot better. I've not been to Butlins myself, but I've heard
good things. I loved it. It was, to me, that was my Disneyland, I guess. But the thing that I always remember about Butlins when I went was that we went to see Ghostbusters in this, as I said, this little cinema, and I'd already saw Ghostbusters, and there was a bit where I totally shit myself at. So I asked my Uncle Jim if I could go for like a piss. So I was too young, so he was like, yeah, I'll take you, because I knew this bit was going to come on. It's a bit in the library. At the beginning with the librarian, right?
With the old bird, yeah.
And I went, and for some reason, I don't know why, I actually done a piss outside, and I don't know if that was just the 80s, man. You know what I mean? Right, so that's why I'm thinking yours was a lot more exotic. So I'm pissing outside, man, and I'm like, I'm thinking maybe this has been the part that, you know, with the librarian, it must have been by now. And then when I went back into the cinema, it was when I was walking down the aisle. The fucking thing jumped. It was walking because I was walking. I felt safer sitting down, man, you know what I mean? Yeah. I felt more vulnerable walking down the aisle.
I think I used to have a similar thing where I used to know like an intimate scene would come up in a film. I'd be with my parents and be like, I sort of knew when it was, so I'd be like, yeah, I need to sort of make a swift exit or make a bathroom break.
I hate that film, man. Things like that. I still don't like King Bart.
Yeah, it's just awkward, isn't it? It's
awkward, yeah. Mega.
Yeah, especially when you're in the cinema and it's totally surround sound and it's all these noises on it with your mouth, not it's like, oh, it's
I'm sort of aware, James, that one of your favourite films is Edward Scissorhands. I was looking into a bit of the soundtrack, and I completely didn't realise that Tom Jones contributed to it as well.
Oh, aye, it was that song. Yeah. With these hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, aye, that's right. I know, that's quite a mad addition to that soundtrack, isn't it? I mean, that's Tim Burton, but you know what I mean? He's quite... I met Tim Burton, so I did.
Oh, wow.
I met him, like, about 10 years ago, and I just played a song, and when I came off stage, Tim Burton was standing there, and I had I'd just been in Japan at the time, so for some reason I had this Edward Scissorhands sticker on my jacket. But it was like, by the time I got from Japan to London or whatever, it was all like kind of like falling off or whatever. But when he was standing there, I just thought, man, that's crazy. I just put a sticker on my jacket and he's standing right there. Standing, and I was walking towards him, and I just pointed at the sticker, and I was like, I'm a fan of you. And he says, forget about that. I'm a fan of you. What? And I know he was just being nice to me. You know, that's why he said that. You know what I mean? I don't believe he's actually a fan or whatever, but I don't think he ever heard of me. But no, he was a really, really sweet guy. Really, really nice guy. That's one of my favourite movies ever. Edward Scissorhands.
We had an artist called Woody J. Healy on a couple of weeks ago, and he was a boxer.
Who was the person?
His name's Woody J. Healy. He's he's a musician on Yala Records, but he just brought out a really good album called Twin Heavy. But he was a boxer, and we were talking to him about, because he essentially said that when his boxing sort of life defined his, you know, his approach to everything, essentially. And I'm, you know, aware that you had a football career before you got into music and writing. Is there sort of a similar path for you there? As in, you know, is there things you've taken from your football career into music?
I think part of it is you're passionate about the thing, you love the thing. And I think there's probably the innocence towards the thing, right? So the reason why you start playing football, the reason you play football can change in time, you know? So you start just kicking a ball against the wall when you're watching the World Cup. But then later on, it changes and it can get like a bit more intense and all that, and that's just quite natural, you know what I mean? And I think that then when you leave school, you become a professional and you're getting paid for it, and that's your job, and that's how you, like, you know, pay the bills, kind of thing. And it's just a much different atmosphere, and the reason that everybody's doing it can alter, and it can. I'm not a hippie or anything like that, but I'm quite laid back, and I'm quite a dreamer, you know what I mean? And money and the other things, I'm not the kind of guy that would put, you know what I mean? Like, I feel quite sorry for Pete if it's sort of somebody in the team that I wouldn't feel like, oh, that's my place, and I want, I've not got that kind of nature, really. And I think that when you're around that, like, really quite competitive environment, then it's just an experience, you know what I mean? And I think that it can be, that's just life, though, you know what I mean? It's like when things are getting more intense, and you can maybe, you don't really know this at the time because you're too young, but you maybe there's times where you doubt yourself a bit, and you don't even know that's what's happening, but you think when the ball's coming towards you, there's no freedom that you've got to really, like, you know, let your instinct and your ideas lead you. It's more like, it can be like fear. It can be, and I think these challenges are, these are the things that I think that can run through most walks of life, that, you know, it could be the same with music. You could look at the guitar and feel that, like, self-doubt that you maybe don't want to pick the thing up because maybe you're going to fail, maybe you're going to, you know, whereas at the beginning that doesn't really exist, any of those. So I think that maybe, like, that's just one of many things that I've probably maybe experienced with football. And so I think that then when I'm in a band or when I'm playing music and when things get more serious, I try and be aware of the innocence part of it and try and protect that a bit more, you know what I mean? I was at a venue to play a gig, and when I got a phone call from the manager from the team that I was playing with, and you know, I'm standing with an amplifier in the pissing rain, and he's like, he was saying, look, don't come back, basically. And he probably had every right to. I wasn't playing well or whatever anyway, but it was fine. But I just remember thinking, fuck, that's my job, so and I was already quite struggling or whatever, so what am I going to do now? And then I went, when I went down the stairs and King Tut's to, when I walked on the stage, and then Alan McGee was in the audience with Carol from the Libertines, And
yeah,
and so it's, I think, I mean, that's probably, I'm sure there's times in everyone, I'm sure there's times in your life when you think it's, there's these kind of weird, there's these weird things that can happen where, you know, it's like, it can be something quite worrying or something that's just like, you know, you're, and something that can happen, and then right at the same time, that just when you need it to happen, it just can turn around, and vice versa, when something's really good, something happens and then something can really break that as well. I think it's quite strange, man.
Yeah, that is very true.
Connecting caller to Las Vegas fan hotline, line one.
Hi, my name's Richard Poxon, and the best time I saw Las Vegas was at the Slade Rooms. It takes a lot for me to go to Wolverhampton, being a West Brom fan, but me and a few mates saw him on the second album. It was a Friday night, and then all the guitars started playing up and fire alarms were going off and everything like that. And I think they broke into The Only Way Is Up, Yazoo, and then they just rocked the rest of the gig. Daddy's Gone, Go Square Go, the lot, just straight down your neck. And in a tiny little place like that, up close, seeing James in the Shades and that, bang on. Can't wait to see him again next year. Good work, lads.
Thanks for your call.
One of Aaron's favourite tunes of yours is Pain, Pain, Never Again. I know you just like that sequence, but I think you mentioned in that you wrote it while staying in Charlie Chaplin's house. What's the story there? What was that place like?
Actually, I wasn't staying there. It was actually a friend one of my other friends is a composer, so he must have was in a house a few like doors down or whatever, and he was composing something, and so when he brought up this piece of music that he'd been working on when he played it, then I started to think about the words for Pain, Pain, Never Again. So we were just in his backyard, and I started writing the words, and the first version that I done of it is with his music, actually. Oh, I should send it to you. Like, I've never let anybody hear it, I don't think, so I should send it to you. But it's like, that was with his music. Nice. But I think that night as well, I think Depeche Mode were playing outside somewhere. I think it was just over the backyard somewhere. So it was quite a, that's right, it's quite a mad little night, but...
Sounds it. It's quality. What's, because I know you spent a lot of time over in LA, sort of maybe around Euphoric Heartbreak. What's your most LA story? Because I know you had like a fan in Lisa Marie Presley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, yeah, a friend. I've not spoke to her for quite a while now. I guess that was quite an LA story. I mean, the night was her birthday party, and we were really, really steaming drunk, man. And when I got into this little room, it was just, you know, I thought there'd be loads of people there, you know, and it was just Priscilla, and it was some of Elvis's old, the bodyguards and stuff, you know, and so it was only like 20 people at the most. But it was just a little room we were in. It was like a jukebox, and it had like Las Vegas's Go Square Go in the jukebox, which is that was quite unexpected choice, a song, you know what I mean? And the Hollywood Hills, and it was like, there's at least 20 or something, like a bunch of gold Les Paul guitars going all the way along the side of the wall, and it was all black ones going on the other wall. And there was this little lady that was standing at the like a beer tap. And it was just one beer tap like at the side of the room. She was just standing there, and I was like wondering what she was doing, and I asked her what she was doing. And she was just standing there, it was Guinness. You know, and she was just pouring Guinness for anybody who was walking by wanted a Guinness. And I was like, this place is amazing. So good.
That's incredible.
I know, I mean, that was, I guess things like that. I guess the first time we met or whatever, then you think about those things, about like, you know, things that you thought were like quite a, like, you know, here, like to like, it was like a Mars or something. It was like in space. Yeah. The distance between you sitting with like you know, Elvis's family. It was like, yeah, you know, I was unemployed before we signed a record deal. You know what I mean? I'd like no electricity cards, and I didn't have any, and it was pitch black, and it was like freezing, and it was like, you know, sitting with a guitar in the pitch black and all that, and it was, you know, I met Lisa Marie when I was unemployed.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I met Lisa Marie, like, you know, we'd recorded like a couple of demos, and she heard Daddy's Gone on YouTube.
Oh wow!
You know, so I met her in Scotland when she first came to Scotland with her family. Yeah. So it was kind of weird, you know what I mean? Then the next day you're going to sign on and all that, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's bizarre. You go to meet Lisa Marie, and it's like she's like, you're meeting her at a bar, like a pub. So you think you're just going to a bar, but the bar's been shut down. The bar's like, you know, closed to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the way it was, you know what I mean? So I'm unemployed. Unemployed. So you've got that side of your life. You've no idea. Yeah. And then you're going to meet her, and she's shut the bar down. And it's like just the bar staff that are there. You walk in, and it's like quite a polar opposite in a lot of ways. But the people are just people. You know what I mean?
They
are. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Off the back of that, James, like one of the questions I was going to ask you, because obviously you went on some pretty big tours, right? Supporting the likes of U2 and Kings of Leon. And I suppose looking back on that and the same thing, you know, like they're like megastars. And do you look back on that? Did you learn anything from those guys? Like, or was it just kind of, you know, going your separate ways after the gig? But yeah, what was it like to kind of tour and hang out with, you know, two really successful, very different bands? Yeah.
A part of it, you're just kind of like, you do taking a stride, but I mean, part of it is like, is nice as well that those people were like really friendly and kind or whatever, you know, because if they weren't like that, I probably wouldn't have really cared if what the music was like, if they weren't you know, nice, you know, nice people. So I think first and foremost, it was that. And, it was, I mean, with the U2 gigs, they were like a different thing. That was different for like any of the other gigs we'd done, you know, just because of the scale of the thing.
The arena, isn't that? Yeah.
I think like they had this stage that was in the middle of the stadium. So it was like, we never sound checked or anything. So you're just walking on, you've never been on this stage, and it's like got a 200 foot claw above your head. So you're kind of like, I don't know, and I hate open doors if I'm in the house. Because when I grew up, my mum would always be like telling me to shut the door. Shut the door, Jane. So I don't like open doors, and I'm still the same. So when I walked on the stage, the U2 thing, it was like, it was just basically a stage in the middle of the stadium. And it was like, no doors. there's no door that you walk through. It's just like a platform. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was a bit like, fuck, I don't know if I like this, but there's got people behind you and all that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you feel like you feel like a monkey in a zoo.
It's a zoo.
Like,
I was going to say the same thing.
It's going to throw a fucking, like, you know, a bit of tangerine at you. You can pick up. Yeah. But it's like, but the thing is, and I probably felt quite like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of these things, it's looking back at it, I can realise how I felt, but I think that at the time, probably I would just convince myself that I was all right with it.
You're just running with it,
But then it's funny because you do one gig, let's say Ireland and then Wembley, and then by the time you get to like Hampden and then Cardiff, it's quite strange how quick you can like get used to it, really. You know what I mean? And then when you look at like, guys that are in the bands, they've been playing gigs like that for a long time, you know what I mean?
But they were.
I think that the thing is with Kings of Leon and Oasis and all that. I realised how good they were. I think you know, I never really knew that much. I knew like some bits and bobs of Kings of Leon and all that, but no, I'd never seen them playing live or anything like that. And I think seeing them every night in America, then it's, you know, the singer's brilliant. So he's like really, really brilliant singer. I never knew that. And then like, I loved Oasis, you know what I mean? Growing up, that is why I picked up the guitar in the first place. So that I already loved their music and stuff. But I think when Noel Gallagher's singing like in the soundcheck, And I realized, it was like, I think we were in like Switzerland or something, and I walked out and there's nobody there, and he's just singing like "Don't Look Back in Anger" or something, and it was just,
yeah,
you know, then you can realize like how great they are, you know what I mean? You two as well. It was normally in a sound check, I think sometimes it's like that because there's nobody there, it's just nothing in the way, it's just a song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, must be incredible. We were actually talking about Bono on a couple of episodes back, and because we were more talking about the fact that, you know, if people have alter egos, people always think of David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust, etc. But nobody really talks about his personas that he had on, I think it was on the Axel Baby tour. Mm-hmm. I know you're quite a big U2 fan, but did he ever do McFeast or anything when you were on tour with him?
Oh, no, I think that I don't think he'd done that character, but he had a couple of, like, I remember that there was, because I loved that, the Zoo TV thing.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And he does, I love that. And I think he done like they done like the Elvis cover and all that kind of thing. But
yeah,
when we done the gigs with him, there was I think he had this jacket on, and it was like all these lights that came out of it. It was like lasers, right, kind of thing that came out of it, and it looked, I was just like, fuck, I really want a jacket like that, but I would have probably a total fanny in it, but I would have still wore it. I'd have still totally wore it, man. You know what I mean? But it was like, and I think it was like a steering wheel that was coming down from somewhere, the heavens or something, I don't know. And so it was a steering wheel that was a microphone and stuff like that, but.
Oh, wow.
But I don't think he had any of the it wasn't, I don't think it was a McFeastle thing or anything like that he'd done. I'm sure it wasn't, but I mean the actual show was like, I mean, fuck it, it's like, it seems like some operation that, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you know what I mean, to get that going.
On the topic of Bono's alter egos, I know you had your own alter egos, Julian Vanderpuss, was it?
Oh, that's right. God. I know that's like my Spotify playlist. It's probably something that in my mind I didn't think anybody was ever going to listen to or see.
It's like a promo video.
You know, or something. I know, it just shows you. It's like, I think you're the first ever person that's actually asked me about that.
Congrats.
So, you know, and because I think I was like the weatherman as well. I was like presenting the weather.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm just like, fuck it, nobody's ever even noticed that. I could have done anything, nobody would even notice. So I'm probably surprised you actually know about that.
I got the eagle eyes, yeah. But would you ever consider performing as Julian Vanderpuss or sort of a no-go zone?
I think it was too uncomfortable. I felt absolutely boiling. I just, like, whatever this jacket was, and it was like my sister put all this fake tan on me and all that. And I felt like it was so uncomfortable, and it was, no, I don't think, I think that's been and gone now. I think it should be just in history. I don't think it should ever come back.
That's a shame to hear, but
Paul did look good. He had a little tight like tank top on, Paul were better, so I would like, I mean, that's something that's timeless, you know what I mean?
Yeah, tanks up at the time, this one. Well, James, thanks so much for coming on, and really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you. You know, really, really looking forward to Godspeed, and it's good to have you guys back. Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much, man.
Hey, appreciate it. Cheers, James. Take care. Bye-bye.